Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Conservation groups sue Trump administration over plan to wipe out habitat for endangered species. And Idaho, under Trump, Justice Department gun for voter roll data. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Trump fired the new U.S. attorney for the District of Western Washington this morning, 54 minutes after federal judges swore him in. Former King County Superior Court judge and federal prosecutor Roger Rogoff said he was waiting in the lobby of the U.S. District Courthouse to meet with interim district attorney Neil Floyd, presumably to take over his office, when he got a text saying Trump had fired him. Trump nominated the right-wing immigration judge Neil Floyd as the new U.S. attorney in January, but there would be no support from U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington under Senate confirmation procedures, which would prevent Floyd from taking the position permanently. Murray opposed Floyd, noting he was not fit for the job, and Trump never sent a formal nomination to the U.S. Senate, instead naming Floyd as first assistant U.S. attorney to avoid the nomination process. U.S. code requires the president to appoint U.S. attorneys, and that is usually done with consultation with the state's senior U.S. senator. The nomination must then pass through the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, where there are hearings, and the U.S. Senate as a whole, where there is a vote. However, Trump's failure to nominate Floyd triggered a U.S. law that allows district judges to appoint a U.S. attorney until the position can be filled by the president. The U.S. district judges did just that with Roger Rogoff, and they swore him in this morning. According to the Seattle Times, Rogoff said after his immediate firing, "We are working on legal action right now." Rogoff recently resigned from his appointment as director of the statewide office on independent investigations to probe police killings, a position he has held since 2022. The Idaho Attorney General's office sent a stern letter to the U.S. Justice Department this week over the Trump administration's attempts to intervene in the state's election process. Idaho Attorney General's Office Elections Division Chief Jim Craig wrote the letter after Assistant U.S. Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, who heads the Trump Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, sent a letter last week to Washington and Idaho election officials, threatening them with criminal prosecution if they do not prevent non-citizens from voting in this year's elections. Craig wrote, "Your insinuations of criminal violations of the federal election laws are not well taken." Craig wrote, "Idaho Secretary of State Phil McGrane has made it clear to the Trump Justice Department that, quote, Idaho shares in your goals of having properly maintained voter registration lists. Idaho has taken a leading role in ensuring that its voter registration list is purged of non-citizens." The letter from Craig continued, "First, you can stop threatening your friends in Idaho. Idaho is fully committed to supporting President Trump's goal of ensuring that only U.S. citizens are registered and actually vote in Idaho." The Trump Justice Department has also sued Idaho over the private voter data. Idaho Secretary of State Phil McGrane says he won't turn over the data, which is protected under state law, to the Trump administration, at least until the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rules on the Justice Department's appeals of two voter data cases it lost in federal court in Oregon and California. The Idaho Capital Sun reported no court has ruled in favor of the Justice Department's private voter data cases in their lawsuits against 30 states. McGrane's attorneys, working through the Idaho Attorney General's office, requested a pause in the case, which the Justice Department opposed. U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill granted the pause in the Idaho case May 21st. The letter from the Civil Rights Division head Harmeet Dhillon does not mention the 2024 executive order from Governor Brad Little and McGrane that expanded the state's efforts to prevent non-citizens from voting. After the Justice Department sued Idaho, McGrane issued a statement which said he is confident, quote, in Idaho's elections and the efforts we've led to ensure secure and accessible elections. A coalition of conservation groups led by the environmental law firm Earth Justice has sued the Trump administration over a new proposed rule to eliminate habitat protections for imperiled species under the Endangered Species Act. Earth Justice attorney Kristen Boyles wrote in a news release, "Preventing harm to wildlife by protecting where they live, eat, and sleep is a basic foundation of the Endangered Species Act. The Trump administration repeal violates the core language of the statute and decades of legal precedent, including from the U.S. Supreme Court. Now more than ever, imperiled fish, birds, and wildlife need protection to survive and recover." Under current rules, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service define harm to a protected species as significant habitat modification or degradation where it actually kills or injures wildlife by significantly impairing essential behavioral patterns, including breeding, feeding, or sheltering. After rescinding that rule, the Trump administration intends to only define harm to a species as, quote, to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or to attempt to engage in any such conduct. According to the Lewiston Tribune, the filing in U.S. District Court in Seattle says, this legal protection against significant habitat destruction that kills or injures endangered wildlife has proven essential to the Endangered Species Act's effectiveness at preventing the extinction of imperiled species and promoting their recovery. It ensures, for example, that the dam-blocking salmon migration, the logging project that cuts down a tree for nesting owls, and the oil and gas development in Alaska that disturbs polar bears are regulated in the interest of species conservation, just as the direct killing of those species would be. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson announced Monday his aim to make the free application for federal student aid, known as FAFSA, a statewide high school graduation requirement. If adopted, prospective high school graduates would need to file the application or formally decline to do so. Governor Ferguson wants to increase statewide completion of the application as part of a broader push to increase the number of Washington residents earning degrees, certificates, or workforce credentials beyond high school. Washington has student financial assistance programs, but low submission rates for free application for federal student aid, which are required to receive state or federal aid, means many students are leaving money on the table. Following his executive order last year to investigate the low submission rates, Ferguson said he believes it is a problem of awareness. 12 states, including California, Texas, and New York, require students to complete FAFSA or formally opt out. Most of those states are top-ranked in the nation for FAFSA completion and all rank higher than Washington. Some school districts in Washington, such as the Federal Way Public Schools and Southeastern Washington's College Place School District, already make FAFSA completion a requirement. In those two cases, completion rates are 67% and 74%. Statewide completion rates is 53%. The State Board of Education is developing its own revision recommendations, and Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl has proposed adding a year-long course for high school seniors on financial literacy and post-secondary readiness. The Washington Roundtable, an organization representing executives of major companies in the state, says in order to meet the needs of the state's economy, 70% of residents need to have some kind of credentials beyond a high school diploma. Those could be a certificate or workforce credential or a college degree. Currently, the number is closer to 40%. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
A coalition of more than 100 groups, including labor unions and community organizations, has launched the No on 645 campaign to defend Washington's millionaire tax, which will be on the November ballot. The new law applies a nearly 10% income tax on household earnings above $1 million. Sam Hatzenbieler of the Economic Opportunity Institute notes it affects less than 1% of households, who now just pay 4% of their income toward public services like education and healthcare.
Voters have the opportunity to weigh in on whether we want to see the ultra wealthy continue to get a tax break at the expense of low and middle income people. The millionaire's tax is one of the single best things we can do to help working families and promote small businesses.
Hatzenbieler explains the funds from the tax will go towards expanding the working families tax credit and cutting the business and occupation tax for small businesses. It will also fund healthcare, education, and childcare. Let's Go Washington, the group behind the push to repeal the tax, argues it will open the door to a broader statewide income tax. Alana Maynor is with North and Central Washington-based Rural People's Voice. She says the burden of taxes has fallen on the shoulders of working families in the state, and it's time for the wealthy to pay their fair share. She also encourages voters to ask who is leading the charge to repeal the millionaire tax.
When I look at who's behind this campaign, it's a hedge fund manager, it's big corporations, it's data center money, it's a whole lot of people who have a whole lot of reason to protect their wealth.
The millionaire tax is estimated to generate about $3 billion in state revenue per year in the next decade, starting in 2029. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
The Latah and Whitman recovery communities offer peer support for people dealing with addiction and other behavioral health issues. Located on Main Street in both Moscow and Pullman, they have a rotating calendar of life skills and recovery support offerings and a harm reduction program that could help you save a life. Moscow also offers a 24/7 behavioral health crisis center, along with men's and women's sober housing. Most services are free or at cost.
Attorneys general from Washington and Oregon have joined a lawsuit by 10 other states in an effort to block Paramount's planned $110 billion acquisition of Warner Brothers. The merger would combine the two largest streaming services, HBO Max and Paramount Plus, and it would also combine CNN News with CBS's news division, which is already under the control of Paramount. The combined company would bring Paramount Pictures, Warner Brothers Motion Picture Group, and DC Studios, CBS, and CBS-owned local television stations, HBO, Showtime, and Discovery Plus under the same corporate umbrella. According to the Spokesman Review, Washington Attorney General Nick Brown said, "As the federal government fails to hold corporations accountable for anti-competitive practices, Washington and other states are stepping up." Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield said during a news conference Monday the states want a restraining order to stop the merger until legal proceedings play out. Rayfield said, "This is an industry that relies on a healthy competition and a competitive marketplace, and when two of the largest studios combine, that competition narrows." A Paramount spokesperson issued a statement Monday saying the lawsuit reflects a fundamentally flawed application of the antitrust laws and is wrong on both the facts and the law. The Antitrust Division of the Trump Justice Department released a statement last month saying they had finished an 8-month investigation of the proposed Paramount transaction and found it was not likely to result in harm to competition between media outlets or to media consumers. Larry Ellison, the billionaire father of Paramount CEO David Ellison, has long been a Trump financial supporter. Last year, David Ellison placed Barry Weiss in charge of the CBS News division, who has already dismantled the division's editorial independence. There are concerns Ellison will put Barry Weiss in charge of CNN once the merger goes through.
Workers at Providence St. Vincent Medical Center in Portland held an informational picket outside the hospital yesterday, calling on Providence Health System to settle a fair first union contract. Caregivers represented by SEIU Local 49, including certified nursing assistants, housekeepers, and dietary staff, have been bargaining since November. Edward Cummings is on the bargaining team and works in environmental services. He says the pay Providence offers falls short of what's needed to retain and recruit caregivers, and some people in the 1,000-person unit are making just above minimum wage.
We've lost some amazing people. We've had people leave for fast food restaurants. Working at a hospital, you think like, oh, wow, you work at a hospital. That's pretty cool. But when I tell them how much I make, they kind of laugh at me. They're like, wow. Really?
In a statement, Chief Executive of Providence St. Vincent, Dr. Ray Moreno, calls their offer very competitive and says it reflects the market. He adds it includes across-the-board raises and pay steps that recognize employees' years of experience. Stephanie Whitworth is a switchboard operator at Providence. She says the company recently made changes to their health insurance benefits that have led to higher costs. She adds many people's medication and doctor's appointments are no longer covered.
I personally was impacted going from a $70 hematology appointment every year to $400 every year. That's been a huge impact, especially since I'm not getting paid a living wage.
Operating assistant Darcy Ross says people are quitting so often, it means she regularly has to train new people on top of her daily duties.
They have to learn the entire hospital. They have to learn everything that we do day to day, and that leads to not only a delay in patient care, but also more workload for those of us who have been here longer.
Workers say the picket is not a strike, and they're hoping to spread awareness in the community about the challenges they're facing. The bargaining teams are back at the table today. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Walkable towns in Montana's Flathead Valley? A nonprofit wants to make it happen, and it says you can help. Forward Montana is planning Amazing Race Flathead Edition, a week-long community event in mid-September that will challenge people to navigate the Flathead Valley without relying solely on a car. Bella Brown with Forward Montana says participants will share their experiences to show local leaders what it will take to build more connected, walkable communities.
We encourage people to carpool, you could walk, you could run, you could do whatever. But if you have to use your car, that's okay. But go ahead and tell us why you had to use that car.
The event is still in the planning stages, and Brown urges people who want to help shape it to attend a virtual planning meeting on Tuesday, July 21st from 6 to 7 p.m. She says it'll be a time to contribute ideas and connect with others who care about walkability and civic engagement. The Amazing Race event starts with a kickoff party Friday, September 18th, and ends the next Friday, September 25th. Brown says she got the Amazing Race idea while attending growth planning meetings in Whitefish this spring. She says in a community where more than 60% of workers live outside town, public transportation would be a big help. According to a 2025 Whitefish Housing Needs Assessment, commuters have limited transportation options, which puts pressure on the city to build more housing. Whitefish is a popular spot for visitors to nearby Glacier National Park, and it's experienced explosive growth in recent years.
Throughout this whole time, everybody's been telling me, even just sitting in the growth plan, you hear about parking and traffic, and you're just like, you know what would fix that? A bus.
Brown says the event ties into Forward Montana's voter registration efforts in September. She adds the election in November will determine who sets local priorities and which initiatives get funded to meet those priorities. She's hoping Montana voters will choose candidates who support public transportation and efforts to help cities and towns grow sustainably. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has issued a heat advisory for tomorrow for the following locations: the Washington and Idaho Palouse, the Lewiston area, Lewis and Southern Nez Perce counties, Lower Garfield and Assotin counties, the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene areas. The heat advisory will be in effect from noon until 9 p.m. Thursday. Hot temperatures with daytime highs 94 to 101 degrees. Hot temperatures may cause heat illnesses. Drink plenty of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area: mostly clear tonight, low 55, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 95. Thursday night, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m., then a slight chance of showers before midnight, mostly clear, low 55. And mostly clear skies Friday through Sunday, with highs 88 and lows 53. Current temperature is 91 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next, followed by Lockdown Mosh Pit. And at 8:30, Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene goes till 10. Syndicated Brazilian music, Bossa Brazil, on at 10 p.m. Stay tuned for more.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to